Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's Mike Shope.
I have these notes, but I gotta say, I'm just fired up to be here today.
And the Bulldog.
Pretty cool. Pretty damn cool.
Woo! On WGR.
Come on! Get up! Come on, get up if you're as psyched as I am.
Sports Radio 550.
That is not me in that clip, by the way. Some have wondered. Many have asked.
No, it's Bulldog, actually.
That's right. When there was a plate of cucumbers out in the bistro, his favorite food. He got very, very amped up for the cucumbers. Sliced just right. Just so. Happy Friday, everybody. I'm Mike Shope. Very pleased to welcome Ian Harditz back to the show. It's been a while. I've done his show once. He was on maybe last year with us, but this guy has all the bases covered. We're going to talk fantasy, NFL draft, and about the NFL in general. Ian, welcome back. How are you these days?
Good to talk to you again, man. Yeah, you came on the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast back in February to preview the Bills' upcoming season, and man, you had me on the bold offseason take about Curtis Samuel taking his talents there. I was all in. Unfortunately, I think he priced himself out just a bit too much, so good for Curtis on getting that cash, but you know what? We'll take Emmanuel Sanders. I'm sure Josh Allen and company will be just fine next year, but yeah, man, a lot of things going on in the NFL world. Excited to be back.
I thought about you and that conversation as soon as I heard that they had signed Sanders because like there went that idea. But Samuel is if you have Samuel in Dynasty, say Ian, that's a pretty good result, I think.
I mean, you look at what he's done, and he's still only 24 years old, and I know we kind of float out these ages for certain guys, you know, Amari Cooper, Sam Darnold, and it gets old, and you're just like, okay, I don't care how young they are. I want this guy to produce at some point. But in Curtis Samuel's defense, man, he comes in the league in 2017, really is banged up that entire year, only played 9 games. And since then, he's only really gotten to play with an injured version of Cam Newton, Kyle Allen, Teddy Bridgewater, and just what he's been able to do in that spare time as both a wide receiver and a running back has really shown off that versatility. So when you have these kind of gadget players or, you know, these kind of tweener types, we've been talking about Kyle Pitts in the draft, someone that maybe doesn't have as defined of a position as someone else, you get nervous about how they might do transitioning to a different offense. But in Curtis's case, man, going to Washington, having Scott Turner there as the OC that was his offensive coordinator during some of his more productive times with the Panthers, I do think it's a great fit. And giving Terry McLaurin someone to take the attention off, you know, we'll see if Ryan Fitzpatrick can keep playing at the top of his capabilities. I feel like at some point the clock kind of has to hit midnight on everything Fitzpatrick has been doing over the past 2 years. But at a minimum, I think this Washington passing game could be quite a bit more entertaining than we've gotten used to in recent years.
Yeah, for sure. And by the way, to your point about players' ages, the one lately that I've been stuck on is that Ezekiel Elliott is 25, not like 29 or something like that. He's still only 25. He'll be 26 in July, I think, Elliott. All right, Ian. So
man, I almost feel yes. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just gonna say, like, to get to the draft here. You know, as a dynasty player myself, and Joe is as well, who is with me today. Like, it's just so exciting to think about all the possibilities with skill position players in this draft. Right from the top, pick 3. There's intrigue. Pick 4, of course, with Atlanta. I just kind of want it to be over now because I can't do anything yet. No, nobody wants to do anything with me yet because there's so much information still yet to be figured out. So these 2 weeks are going to drag.
Yeah, and look, the landing spots for all these guys are so important. And that is just what I would kind of caution everyone, because we've seen, you know, the guys like Justice Hill, you know, Benjamin, Darwin Thompson, like we just fall in love with these prospects. And then even when they wind up in situations where we realize they're really not going to get the touches we're hoping for, we kind of stick to our pre-draft, you know, guns just a little bit too much. So don't get me wrong. It's great to know as much about these prospects as possible. Just realize, people, particularly in fantasy football, you know, if your guy is not getting drafted in the top three rounds, we are, you know, looking at a tough future potential, at least in that first year. I mean, truly, man, since 2010, rookie running backs not drafted inside the top three rounds to finish just at the top 24 back, not even top 12, just top 24, RB2 land, Roy Helu, Zach Stacy, Jordan Howard, Alfred Morris, Philip Lindsay, and James Robinson most recently. So only six guys over a 10-year period, man. And, hey, maybe talent slides or something and they land in that perfect spot like, you know, some of these guys have in the past. But to me, you know, just be careful with some of these players, because when we have these 3 months, you know, from January to April every single year, even 4 months, whatever, but when you have that much time to kind of go over the same group of rookies, you know, not having any extra football actually being played, I do think we tend to overhype these guys when NFL teams don't like them quite as much as we do.
Yeah, and you know, landing spot of course is massively important. It's interesting how last year went. I mean, you mentioned Robinson, that's quite an anomaly with what happened there, but Edwards-Helaire, he was nobody's number one running back in fantasy until the draft, and then he was everybody's. And so he goes to the top of the list. That did not go very well, relatively speaking. And you had Taylor and Swift and the guys in the second round, even Dobbins. I mean, production from all of them. So I don't know, did we overreact last year to this?
I think on the Clyde news, I mean, it was a pretty hectic start to the season. Actually, we had the Alvin Kamara back issue popping up when he was kind of going out there looking for a new contract. I mean, there was a point where I think CEH was even getting floated as the RB4. I think it really got out of control after Damian Williams opted out of the season with COVID, and you kind of looked at the Chiefs depth chart and it was like, well, who else are they going to give the ball to? So, you know, the Clyde expectations probably got a little bit too out of control for an offense that we knew was going to go through Tyreek and Kelce at the end of the day. But with that said, man, I think the five teams right now that really could foster the most productive rookie running back, at least in 2021, the Falcons, the Jets, the Steelers, the Dolphins, and Jaguars. The last two, not quite as much. I don't hate James Robinson or Miles Gaskin, but let's face it, there's not a bunch of draft capital or resources from either of those organizations behind those guys, particularly with the Jacksonville Jaguars. I'm just not convinced that Urban Meyer and Daryl Bevell signed up to really give Robinson that same workhorse role that he had in 2020. So the Falcons, Jets, and Steelers, those are the three teams to me where if, you know, Najee, Etienne, Williams, you know, whoever your cup of tea is at the running back position, if we see them going the Falcons, Jets, or Steelers, we are loving it. I know the Cardinals were a team that people were looking at as well, but I think with them signing James Conner and, more importantly, only having two selections in the first two rounds of the draft, I just think they have more pressing needs elsewhere than, you know, throwing that running back position. That I think we overterm, you know, running backs don't matter. I know my company, PFF, loves to say that. I think the only reason there is some truth behind that is because, you know, just – in the salary cap system, if you had to rank every single position and say, okay, where can we best get away with, you know, spending less resources, you will find that running back is that spot in terms of devoting later round picks to the unit. But, you know, in fantasy year one, typically draft capital and money does tend to talk in terms of getting that opportunity.
Ian Harditz of PFF here on WGR. I'm Mike Shope, and Bulldog is off today. So the quarterbacks are the name of the game at the top of the draft, of course, and the big drama is around San Francisco. How have you sort of interpreted what you've heard about what they do there? And then, Ian, in a fantasy sense or context, I feel like it's really important what they do, because I think fantasy is ready to love Justin Fields in San Francisco and maybe not Mac Jones. I mean, there's a big disparity in how those two players are viewed.
Yeah, man, I've gone back and forth on it a little bit in recent days because, look, guys like Dano Jeremiah and Adam Schefter that have far more, you know, plugs into the NFL world than I do, when they're saying that Mac Jones, the 49ers, is a realistic thing, and we do know after Kyle Shanahan signed his latest contract extension with him having final say in that 49ers, you know, draft room, I do think the Mac Jones murmurs do make sense. But then we see yesterday with DraftKings Sportsbook, Fields taking the lead again. So, you know, gun to my head, I would go with Justin Fields. I just don't know why they would trade up to three to get someone, Mac Jones, that we I mean, even if you are, you know, more of a Mac Jones apologist than the next guy and you think you can have a bright future, just from a raw physical tool standpoint, I mean, why would you trade up all the way to 3 to get this guy when you could likely get him a couple picks down? So just from that point of view, I do think it's Fields. And, man, the situation, maybe in 2021 it's not ideal because the 49ers do keep on, you know, pounding the Jimmy G door. If he is healthy, I think he's good enough not to get benched for Fields immediately. But, man, oh, man, like the one constant we've seen from rookie QB1 since 2010, and we've had seven of them, Cam Newton, Kyler, Dak, RG3, Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck, and Justin Herbert. All those guys except for Herbert started in week 1, and they averaged at least 25 rushing yards per game in college. I mean, look, we saw the Justin Fields 4.44 at his pro day, but he was doing this, I mean, all the time at Ohio State. I mean, we get worried when a pro day doesn't match what we saw from the guy on film, but, you know, whether it's him running down Trey Sermon at Michigan State from like 60 yards behind, whether it's him, you know, just against Clemson looking like one of the better athletes on the field before he took that nasty hit in the back. I mean, we have seen Fields function as a fantasy friendly dual threat talent. So for me, you know, looking at him really throughout this draft process, the three teams that I kind of looked at where I said, okay, if Fields gets drafted by them, I'm comfortable really treating him as a superior quarterback to Lawrence in the fantasy world, at least in 2021, it'd be San Francisco, Carolina, and Denver. So for me, those are the top three teams where if it Fields, you know, Lance, whoever else, if they can get on one of those squads, and you got playmakers all over the place, and I'm also, you know, liking the chances of them getting on the field sooner rather than later.
Okay, so if Denver, that makes sense. I mean, with their receiver crop is great.
Yeah.
If those teams, those three teams you listed, drafted, one of them drafted Justin Fields, you'd put him at, like in a super flex, he'd be 101 over Lawrence for you?
Yeah, I feel good enough about that. I mean, with Lawrence, he has similar tools. I mean, I brought up the 25 rushing yards per game.
Yep.
He's not Justin Fields as a rusher, but look, man, I saw him go 60 yards against my Ohio State Buckeyes in that game 2 years ago. That dude can run just fine himself. I just think in a fantasy term, Justin Fields is going to rely on his legs a little bit more. And it's just a cheat code in fantasy football. Look no further than Jalen Hurts being like the QB9 right now in average draft position to show you that you don't need to be a great real-life quarterback to be thought of very highly in the fantasy world. So, yeah, I mean, San Francisco under tutelage with Kyle Shanahan, Denver where you're getting Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, who I know some people are off of after last year. I am not at all. I think he's going to be very special and still has great years ahead. Noah Fant, Albert O, KJ Hamler, and obviously with the Panthers, even with Sam Darnold there. If we do get one of these mini Justin Fields slides, which I do think is unlikely, but hey, scoop him up. You still got DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, and some good schemers in there with Joe Brady as well. So, yeah, I think Denver, Carolina, and San Francisco, top three landing spots for any incoming rookie QB.
Okay, so let's substitute Lance for Fields and have the same conversation. If it's Lance in I don't know, Denver maybe is the one I'll start with because they're lower. I'm saying that's the likeliest landing spot for him. Like maybe Atlanta is and he would be a backup right away, which is a whole different thing. How close to Fields is Lance?
So looking at these guys, I had an article go up on PFF.com a couple weeks ago where I was looking at just the incoming rookie QBs and who offered the most fantasy-friendly rushing upside. From a pure athlete perspective, Justin Fields, I think, is just bigger, faster, stronger than Trey Lance. Like he, if you just wanted to, you know, have these guys to see who's kind of better athlete, I think you'd say Justin Fields. But Trey Lance, the things he does run the football, man, our PFF comp for him, which you can find in our 2021 draft guide, is Taysom Hill with actual arm talent. And if you saw Taysom Hill play last season, you might have been disgusted at, you know, the triple crow hops to try to underthrow a ball 40 yards downfield. But you also saw him running around making a lot of plays because, when quarterbacks run, I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but when quarterbacks run, it's just a cheat code in fantasy football. So Trey Lance averaging 73 yards per game in his final two seasons at North Dakota State. Man, we only saw him one time this year. It was 15 carries, 143 yards in a pair of scores. I understand the competition is going to be far different. He's not going to have as much success, but truly, he just has more of that run-first mentality that we don't see elsewhere with the other quarterbacks. Similar to Jalen Hurts. Like, if Trey Lance is under center, I'm confident we're going to see double-digit rush attempts from day one. So I think he's much more raw than Fields. It's going to be harder for him to land that starting spot. Washington's kind of been floating floated around as that popular trade-up candidate, or maybe if he slips, you know, he ends up there. So, 2022 and beyond, it's more of a conversation. But just in 2021, I think Lance is going to have a hard time really catching on anywhere other than Denver, because let's face it, man, even if I am a little bit more of a Drew Lock apologist than the next guy, just because, in between all those awful plays, he does put some pretty good throws on film from time to time. Let's face it, Denver, that's the single easiest job for an incoming rookie QB
right.
to take over, and they would have those aforementioned weapons to throw to as well.
Ian Harditz of PFF. Ian, Kyle Pitts. So where do we want him? And is there a scenario where, like in a one quarterback league, you could take him first overall in a rookie draft?
If you're in tight end premium, I think it's warranted, man, because look at the top tight ends that have pretty much taken over fantasy football. It's Travis Kelce, Darren Waller, and George Kittle. And yes, they're tight ends, but you know, these guys are number one receivers in their offense. And we can talk Kelce versus Tyreek. They're both getting 130-plus targets yeah. per year. The Chiefs happen to be blessed enough to have two number one receivers in their offense. But you know, you go back to like Jimmy Graham in 2013-14, the whole franchise tag debacle. He wanted to be called a wide receiver so he can make more money than the tight ends. Like, it's just one of those things where I think Pitts is like just being kind of thrown into this tight end class when, who cares? He's a number one receiver. That's why he's being talked about in the top 10. And I think that, you know, when we're comparing him to past tight ends, he's a unicorn. His coach has been saying that. He's been saying that. He is just such a unique receiver. And I think too much is being paid to just his positional designation. So as we've seen basketball become a little bit more of a, like a positionless sport in recent years, football is getting that way as well. So 10 years ago, I'd be a little more concerned about Pitts coming out. You know, hey, maybe it could still happen, man. Maybe the New York Giants draft him and Jason Garrett just doesn't think he's blocking well enough as an inline player, and they decide to put him down there. But man, when you hear everything coming out with this guy, you know, it seems like if he escapes the top 10 picks, that would be a surprise. I just don't think you make that sort of just selection with a player and you don't have a great plan for him. So with Pitts, man, he's too big for safeties. Too big for cornerbacks to deal with. He's too fast for safeties or linebackers. And then you just look at him with the catch point. He just seems like he's too damn good for pretty much anyone to guard. So Kyle Pitts, I'm in on him. I think, you know, you're not exactly getting him anywhere close to a value in most best ball drafts I've seen. He's already kind of going
yeah.
tight end six, tight end seven. But, man, the ceiling is there based on what we've seen from him in his last 2 years really at Florida. So, hey, we've only seen Evan Engram and Rob Gronkowski function as a rookie tight end ones, top 12 at their position since 2010. But Pitts, man, if you can get on the Dolphins, Falcons, maybe even Jerry Jones gets his wet dream and he goes to the Cowboys, I think Pitts could be number three on that list.
I have a tough time finding a perfect team, though. From like, there's just a little bit of a hitch with each of those, whether it's Gesicki in Miami. Atlanta doesn't feel right to me with what they have already and the way the coaches coached before Arthur Smith. Cincinnati, I think, works, but I think I'm putting them on Jamar Chase. So, and Detroit has Hockenson. Like, I don't know where I want him, Pitts.
No, that's a fair point. I would say with the Dolphins, I mean, Mike Gesicki is a glorified slot receiver. Last season alone, I mean, he spent three times the amount of snaps as he did in the slot. He spent three times the amount of snaps he did in line as he did in the slot. So I think he really could just kind of use Gesicki and Pitts kind of as tight end slot hybrids and keep them on the field at the same time with Devontae Parker and Will Fuller. So I see what you're saying. And, you know, it is tricky to always assume rational coaching in the NFL.
Yep.
Maybe he does go to Detroit and we see Hockenson, you know, playing far over him in the beginning. So that's why, you know, I'm not actively shooting for him, expecting greatness in 2021, just because we could see a situation where, you know, he's already being priced at tight end six. You know, it's hard for him to go too much up on that. I'd rather take someone priced a little bit closer to their floor. But I just think the overwhelming talent there for someone that I believe he's still only 21 years old, he sure looks a lot like the league's next great tight end.
Right. Ian, a few more minutes here. How about Jamar Chase? Like, is he, for you, the easy number one receiver, or is it close?
Yeah, to me, he's the easy number one. And, you know, all the credit in the world to Justin Jefferson, but Jamar Chase was the number one receiver on that LSU team. So I just can't really get past that, man, because as great as Waddle, Devontae Smith, you know, we even got Chase's other teammate, Terrence
Marshall,
getting a lot of steam. Yeah, Terrence Marshall getting a lot of steam as well. I just think Chase, man, that dominance he showed in 2019, not just dominance, but against number one corners week in and week out against Alabama, against Clemson down the stretch as well. I mean, it was just one dominant display after another. So for me, Ja'Marr Chase, he is that, you know, I don't like using the word generational, but man, he sure looks like one of the best wide receiver prospects of at least the last 5 years. I know he doesn't have the most overwhelming size, you know, not doesn't have that 4.3 speed, but man, it's just one of those things where with the production, he passes it, with the eye test, he passes it, and the chance to pair him with the very same quarterback that gave him all that success, I think it's too much of an opportunity for the Bengals to pass up that high in the draft. I know they need to continue to address the offensive line, but to their credit, they have used two of their last three first-round picks on the offensive line. I think there's an argument to be made that getting, you know, a potential perennial number one receiver like Ja'Marr Chase could be more important at this stage in the NFL than really adding another tackle to your offensive line. And, you know, no disrespect to Penei Sewell. Maybe he is going to be one of the better left tackles the league has seen in quite some time. But to me, Ja'Marr Chase just has that higher upside factor, and I would rather try to do that and enhance Joe Burrow as much as possible, as soon as possible.
I like it. Ian, last thing, the Bills. So they're picking 30th. Maybe it's right to think it'll be defense or a lineman. They're not really, probably anyway, in the skill position game this year. They could be. Round two, at least, they could be. More likely. What do you like for them, and what would a certain move, say it's a running back, right? I mean, they didn't run the ball well. So say they do that in even the second round. Where would that leave you with who the guys they have? I mean, it seems like that might be over for the guys they have if they were to do that.
Yeah, I hope they don't take a running back, man. It's not, and I don't even know that Moss or Singletary are even all that great. It's just the way that Josh Allen plays football. It doesn't help his running backs at all. Josh has been one of the most productive scorers on rushing touchdowns since he entered the league. He's literally one of only a handful of guys with 20-plus rushing touchdowns since 2018. And also, as we've seen with Josh, you know, he's going to chuck that ball downfield. He's not going to check it down as much. So with the committee already in place, like, it's already been brutal enough with the two RB system they've been deploying. If we add a third player to that equation, that's going to be especially problematic, man. So I would say someone like Kenny Gainwell, I'd be really excited to see them get. Just give me someone that can add to the receiving juice, because as we've seen with the Bills, really over, you know, as long as Brian DeBoer is going to still be calling plays and everything, this is a pass-first offense. So let's keep getting Josh Allen more receivers. I like the Emmanuel Sanders signing to just, you know, help replace John Brown. I thought Gabriel Davis was qualified enough to do that anyway, but whatever, man. It's more weapons for Josh Allen. You're about to have to pay him a boatload of money. Let's get him another receiver. So Kenneth Gainwell, if you're going to address the skill position units, if there was a second tight end, you know, maybe we could look that way. But to be fair, I think Dawson Knox has flashed enough to warrant maybe another year seeing what he can do. So I know he needs to be more consistent, had a bunch of problems with the drops as a rookie. But as we know, man, a tight end can be one of those positions where it's pretty hard to master as a young player. You got to be a phenomenal blocker and receiver at the same time. And the fact that Knox has shown the ability to make some circus catches, and I mean, some of the yak. I mean, I forget the Bengals defender he stiff-armed as a rookie, but that dude still might be spending. Some of the big plays Knox has made makes me believe that, you know, he's not someone I want to give up on just yet. So I would say, you know, give me a receiving running back, someone that can maybe line up in the slot from time to time as well, if you're going to address, you know, the skill position units. Otherwise, yeah, let's just build up that defense, build up the offensive line, because as we saw last year, again, clearly not too much is wrong with this Bills offense at the moment.
Great job, Ian. It's cool to talk to you again. Thanks for coming on today.
Absolutely, man. Enjoy April, and then we got the true offseason on the way.
Yes. If you're up for a breather, there's one coming. All right. Thanks, Ian. Ian Harditz from PFF on Twitter. His Twitter feed, Joe, I think you agree, is really fun and cool. Like he's smart and funny, and he uses
the memes,
clips well.
The GIFs, yeah. The videos.
The memes and the GIFs. IHARTITZ, Ian Harditz from PFF. Thanks to him. We will do some baseball next. Ben Wagner coming up from the Jays. We'll talk about their start. Their game is postponed already for tonight. A few games already. I've seen three. The Mets in Colorado, the Red Sox at home, snow, and Kansas City at home to Toronto, all already postponed. Some baseball next. Sal at 5, talking NFL. I got to say it right here, because I almost forgot. Joe, somebody tweeted at me. I didn't know that Peter King is reporting they're not doing a doubleheader week one Monday Night Football.
Oh, okay, that's right.
Week 18.
I saw reference to that.
So one game on Monday night. That makes predicting the schedule a little bit less fun.
Denver's out.
Denver is out. I agree. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. This is WGR. Just talking NBA futures there with Gavin during Ready, Set, Bet. Looks like Donovan Mitchell is hurt.
Lower leg.
For Utah. Yep. So I don't know how bad, but a story to watch. Utah, best record in the West. Golden State. We talked about Golden State, Cleveland yesterday. Little basketball show here. And Steph Curry had another big game. Cleveland, or Golden State, winning in Cleveland last night.
I watched game one from 2018.
Instead of the actual game?
The game might have been over by that point, but yeah, last night.
All right. Happy to have Ben Wagner on the line. Boy, Joe, we are just pa-pa-pa-pa-pa today. Love it. Ben Wagner on the Blue Jays broadcast, of course, former voice of the Bisons, and the Jays are in Kansas City, although I guess no game tonight, right, Ben?
Correct. Washed away and an early decision, probably rightfully so, and we'll tee it up tomorrow with the twin bill.
Yeah, there's a lot of scrambling on the baseball schedule already today. Ben, how about the I want to get to the Jays, of course, that's the point, but let me ask you about the ballpark and the start of the season in Dunedin. How did it go? I mean, I didn't hear about any difficulties with it. I also didn't get any sort of reaction or feedback to the venue, to how the ballpark played or anything like that. What's the story from these first games in Dunedin?
You know, I think overwhelmingly, okay. there's no glowing reviews here because the Blue Jays, just they don't want to be here that long. They've committed to the three home stands. Everything from a fan perspective, a Blue Jay perspective, and even a visiting team perspective have been done with very good thought and a lot of care, but not long term. But that's very evident, you know. So the tent structure is nothing like it was erected in Buffalo, you know, for what was expected to be the entire season, and it was the entire season last year. Things are going to look a lot more permanent in Western New York this coming summer once the Blue Jays uproot from here and get to Buffalo, because every indication is that they're heading to Buffalo. So, the pit stop that they've got in Dunedin, it's been okay. The lighting, the big things are about lighting, about amenities, all those things. And the visiting team and the home team are taken care of in that front. And the lights have been good. And the ballpark has been flipped. So, you know, it's easy to nitpick, honestly, but it's hard to point out at one thing, you know, that has not been living up to any expectation.
Okay, well, that's good, I guess. Pretty much every team in the American League is like two games apart. Boston at 9-4, and then what's the worst record in the American League? 5-8. Toronto at 6-7, very sort of a lot of parity in the start of the season. Are we pleased with what the Jays are to this point, Ben?
No, because I think the offense was supposed to be firing on more cylinders. And when you take away George Springer, that really shortens the lineup for me. And there was so much emphasis put on George Springer's arrival, let alone his impact in this lineup, batting leadoff with some pop at the top. And Simeon has done an okay job, but he's not George Springer in that leadoff spot. And that disrupts everything else. So the Blue Jays, more recently, when they've been able to score a bulk runs, and I'm talking like 4 to 7 runs a night, that is more of the MO I think we're going to see from this offense. In the early going, those first 8 to 9 games, wasn't really the case. I expected a lot more crooked numbers, especially with a couple of surprises. Like for me, Randall Grichuk and his turnaround is a big surprise. Bo Bichette, a little bit of a clunky start. Now he's accelerated. He's a nice surprise. You lose Teoscar Hernandez. That's a big ding in the lineup. So, you know, nothing's been easy on this lineup, but I still thought they were going to perform at a little bit higher level.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr., however, what a great start for him. I mean, this is the player we heard about.
I think this is the guy that many Bison fans were watching right before his major league call-up, right? This is the guy that I was looking from Rogers Center back at Salem Field and salivating over because of the rising line drives and the backspin on the baseball and the way that he was just attacking any opponent. Finally, this is the hard work a commitment in physical shape, plus now a discipline that he's really made a commitment to, is paying off. And it's nice to see the reward translate from a spring training perspective also to a regular season perspective. It's very, very real with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I watched it for 6 weeks in spring training. I've had my eyes on it when they've been in Dunedin and then watching from afar for that first road trip. This is the guy. This is the guy, and this is the guy that you expected to see.
What are we saying about how it went the other way? Is it like we saw a lot, heard a lot about his weight? That was obvious. You know, it was sort of just jumped out at you. He was big, and just like, you know, hitting the ball on the ground as often as he did. Now it seems to be back, and you've got the exit velocity stats and the launch angle and everything. Everything looks right. What's the right story about how he went the wrong way?
I think he was chasing too much. I think there was an approach. There was a breakdown in approach, and he was committing to trying to do too much with bad pitches instead of attacking on a pitch where he knows he can do damage with. And a lot of information is being thrown at you at a very young age. And all these guys are young, and some of them have had raving success. Some of them are just, I think, swallowed up by the amount of data that's available to them. And I think Vladdy was a combination of trying to do too much plus the amount of data that was being given to him in these certain situations. He expanded his strike zone. And that's not the player that I watched,
right,
or heard about in 16, 17, even then at the start of 2018 before the injury. This is a guy that never expanded his strike zone. This is not the guy that we kept hearing about. Now you're seeing a much more disciplined Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and doing damage within the pitches that are in that zone.
All right, Ben, what is the official statement from the Jays about Dunedin? Is it through May?
3 homestands. So right before the close of May, and you get into that Memorial Day window, mm-hmm. there's a road trip. So right now, 3 homestands on the schedule, and then everybody's saying what they're not saying. We're going to Buffalo.
Yeah,
that's the point. And the reason that it's even going to take this long, one, there are weather concerns, right? I mean, there are times where the weather breaks later in Western New York. There are opportunities that the weather is nicer in Western New York earlier. That's okay, but there's a ton of construction that needs to be accomplished right now in Buffalo, and it's internal and it's external, and it's vital to the success of wherever a team moves, whether it's AAA or it's the Major League team. That construction must be completed for both the visiting team and specifically whoever calls Buffalo home.
And so we could be, if the timing stays on that path, we could be looking at the traditional Marlins-Blue Jays opener here.
You've never wanted a rivalry more than Marlins-Blue Jays in Buffalo.
Just like last year. That was the first games were against Miami.
Yeah. Yes, so it was. A walk-off.
The Jays have Miami at home, wherever that may be, hopefully here, at least I would say that, June 1st and 2nd. All right, Ben, nice to catch up with you. Thanks for your time.
Great to chat with you again, Mike. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Ben Wagner,
cheers,
Blue Jays broadcaster on Twitter at BenWag247. Just tell me when I could buy a ticket this time. I want to buy a ticket. I want to buy tickets to some of these games. Marlins at Blue Jays, June 1 and 2. Houston, just go and boo your heart out. June 4, 5, and 6. What do you like there, Joe? You like Houston? You think you might like to go to that one of those games?
Yeah, I got to figure out if I want to go at all because I'm interested. But I've never been to a major league game. And I don't know, can my first major league ballpark be Salem Field?
It can and it should.
I feel like Pittsburgh is cool for that.
Well, here's what you do.
I've never wanted it to be Toronto because I want it to be like a destination ballpark. And I don't consider Toronto that, even though I like the Blue Jays.
I think you could, but you just have to go to a game in May. You have to go to a game before June 1st.
Okay.
Make a Pittsburgh trip. I'll go if you want.
How easy is that right now?
It's easy. Well, I shouldn't say, I don't know. Because of the limitations, they're over 10%, the Pirates. But I don't know what it's like. I don't know what it's like getting baseball tickets anywhere right now. Like,
is there even a secondary market? Is that a thing?
I don't even know.
All right, I'll look into it.
Of course, travel and everything like that in a normal year, it's very easy to do it, and it's a beautiful place.
Oh, there is a secondary market, and they're They're affordable. That could be done. I like this Pittsburgh idea. Maybe I'll do it. Maybe I'll go to Pittsburgh before June, and then I will go to
a perfectly
game.
A perfectly appropriate, worthy stadium for your first major league game. And then, then you go see the Jays in Buffalo, if we can. I mean, we'd better be able to. I'm saying that.
How are the Royals? Are they interesting?
Not really. Why, are you going to Kansas City now?
I'm not going April 28th, then, to Pittsburgh.
They play the Royals?
Yeah.
That's next weekend. Or no, it's the week after that.
No, that's
not a weekend.
That's the night before the draft, actually.
Wednesday.
Yeah, that's not happening.
No. Weekend. I'm thinking you're going to pick a weekend for this idea, right?
Yeah, it's St. Louis Cardinals, May 1st, bobblehead giveaway, Wonder Woman. All right.
I don't have one of those.
Me neither.
I don't have a Wonder Woman bobblehead, so maybe I should go to that game, too.
We do need more stuff in here, too, so
you know,
that could be the start.
I don't think so.
You don't think we need more stuff?
We need less. I think we need less. I'm not about stuff anymore. I'm about the removal of stuff. Sal Capaccio coming up at 5. We'll try to predict the schedule, have some fun with that. But we did find out here that the report is there will not be a doubleheader on Monday Night Football in Week 1. So that'll take some of the luster off of this idea. Whatever, though. We'll still do it. Really, it's a question largely about whether the Bills would be in prime time in that first game. They were on, 4 times last year? And the ratings were good, and the team was great. So, that possibility, maybe the Chiefs in that Sunday night opener, it's something we've talked about before. They are on Tampa's schedule as well, but I wouldn't expect, I think Sal agrees, that the Bills would get that game against the Bucs. Maybe, though. 803-0550 for us. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog. Chris is off today. Sneaky Joe is here. This is WGR.
We all want the same thing for Jack, and Jack included. We all want him to be back on the ice 100% healthy. We all feel that that will happen at the start of training camp next year. But next steps will be next steps in a few more weeks from where we go from here.
Kevin Adams, Jack Eichel's future continuing to be a topic with fans here and all over the NHL. Darren Dreger on the Instigators this morning said that he doesn't think Eichel will be back in Buffalo. I don't see him playing there next season. From Dreger.
He also said Eichel wants to have surgery, which goes against what Adam said yesterday about rehab. So,
yeah, that, you know, if we're out here trying to guess at what everybody is thinking or how everybody is feeling, you wouldn't want things like that to complicate matters, right? Disagreements over procedures and everything, and that sort of off the areas that aren't obvious. You look at 6 years of almost last place hockey, and you're like, that's pretty obvious. You can understand why he might want it, you know, a new team, but that sort of stuff, who knows? And that, you know, anything like that where you feel like maybe there's a disagreement doesn't help. Okay. Rachel's Fresh Picks got the BetQL tip sheet, Joe.
All right. NBA stuff tonight, maybe?
Knicks, Mavs?
Okay. My Knicks? I've not checked in on my Knicks in a while, though.
I have the Knicks +5 at Dallas. Dallas is in that cluster of teams. They're the 7, I think, right now.
Yep.
So there's a play-in game in basketball.
Yeah. 7 versus 10 and 8 versus 9.
Golden State's in there, too.
They're 9th, so it would be, Mavericks, Spurs right now, and then Grizzlies, Warriors. So, Curry's been amazing lately.
Yep, 30 again last night. Maybe you can get a little softness in Utah if this Mitchell injury today is, you know, sounds bad. Yeah. They are what are they, 41-14 maybe? They're the top seed in the West. But that would be a big factor in how people, you know, see it going with Utah. Phoenix is up there. I don't know. I'm looking at the BetQL sheet. It tells you how certain of their model has had success in certain situations, like when Max Scherzer pitches like he does tonight for Washington, or when Adrian Hauser pitches for Milwaukee. It doesn't tell me what to do. Make a call. I need to make a call here because the BetQL tip sheet, you know, you got to go in there and then you subscribe to it, and then they'll tell you they're not telling me what to do with these picks.
Make a call.
Exactly.
They're giving you percentages, though. So
percentages.
Wouldn't I just want to look at the best percentage? So, like, the Tigers have a 39% chance to beat the A's tonight. Well, I guess that's not odds, though.
Oh.
Right. I'm looking lower.
You and I are reading it differently, then.
Oh, okay.
Is it, so it says Nationals minus 210, right? It's not predicting the Nationals, necessarily. It's just saying that this is a game where the BetQL model.
No, that's right. I'm looking lower. I'm looking at when they start going through, like, local teams, and they'll give you, all right, the Pirates have a 38% chance to beat the Brewers. They don't give you the odds on top of that, but it would be up to you then at that point to kind of go find
calculate
the
odds
and calculate if that's a good bet, 38%.
Well, I will want to do that. I have not done that yet. I want to do that.
No hockey tonight. Nothing about the Grand Salami on here.
The Golden Knights, 76.9% to beat Anaheim. That's the only one I've got.
Yeah.
Colorado games.
76% in hockey. Should never be that high. For any
yeah,
game.
I know. It's almost
any
never
team
higher than
out
that.
Any game ever.
Colorado, LA postponed through the weekend. No. COVID. Vancouver has had its issues. Their games are still scheduled, the Canucks. But Avalanche, Kings are off. Avalanche are dynamite, but they're not going to have their next couple games scheduled with LA with some positive cases there. You know what we could do? Last year, when Bulldog was away, We did some drafts on Fridays, you and I, like fantasy drafts.
Yes.
And I think that might be cool to do for Dynasty, because that's why, like, you and I are talking fantasy in April or anytime, like, away from the football season. It's because of that. It's because you're trying to make decisions in Dynasty. So maybe we do, like, a mock startup draft, if we can do that, after Sal.
Dynasty startup?
Yeah.
All right.
Give people an idea. Like, people are... Some listeners would be curious about it. Others would not be. But some would be curious about, like, how do I get in on this? And what is it? So we could talk about that a little bit, maybe next hour. Sal Capaccio coming on first. And we'll talk about the schedule a little bit. The NFL schedule is not expected to be out for about another month. The draft first. We'll talk about that a little bit as well. But we'll do that with Sal after the update. I'm Mike Shope with Joe DiBiase. Bulldog is off today. This is WGR.